Our next guest is, he's truly an icon in the world of folk music, and in fact, in music in general. As a member of Peter, Paul, and Mary, he's written and performed such classics as the ones that you've just been listening to, such as Puff the Magic Dragon, Day is Done, Light One Candle. And his music creativity has always gone hand in hand with his commitment to social justice and equality in society. He's going to be playing here in Grand Marais next week, the 26th. He's going to be at the ACA at 7:30. So we're so lucky to have him in our community. And that's Peter Yarrow. Peter, I want to welcome you to the Roadhouse.
It's a great pleasure to talk to you. And I'm delighted to be with you in Grand Marais coming up. Well, I love the word Grand Marais, because everybody in New York gets confused. They say Grand Mariah, they call Wynn Mariah, but I love it.
Yeah, we don't even know if we're pronouncing it correctly. A French word.
It's
that
French.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's Marais, absolument, Marais, monsieur.
That sounds much better than the way I say it, Peter.
Right.
Well, we're happy to have you here, and we had a little snow yesterday. It's warming up today, and I think you're gonna like this area when you get here. I kind of grew up with your music, with songs that I remember so well. Puff the Magic Dragon, how can you forget that? And many others. But not only were you really active in music, musicology, writing beautiful songs, but you were also real busy in the chaotic 60s when a lot of things were happening. Somehow you were able to put the message and the music together.
Well, yeah, that was true, and we weren't inventing that conjunction. We were shown the way. Excuse me, by Pete Seeger and the Weavers, who lived that message, and they didn't only sing the songs; they participated in the events that were moving the social political landscape at the time. And that's what we did, and we stood on their shoulders and the shoulders of Woody Guthrie and others. And that still is happening today. It's, of course, this is not Tops of the Pops music anymore, but it's in the hearts of the people of America. It's in the schools, it's in the churches, the synagogues, the mosques, it's in the summer camps. And I believe with the net, it will reemerge, you see, because popular music now is so driven by the dollar. It's a matter of selling records. It's bottom line. It's all about the money. And that's a pity, because when money becomes the arbiter of taste and value, it's all about the broadest distribution. I mean, Bobby Dylan never would have happened. He was too hard. You know, if the structure of the music business were today, were then, what it is today. It's just, I mean, people who were on the edge or oddballs, you know, people who are writing songs of conscience now, very rare. I mean, do you tell me who wrote anything like Blowing in the Wind that everybody knows in the world of art today? And it's very sad, but that doesn't mean that music is over. It just means that we've got to get beyond the boundaries of what money is as it does to a field when it takes over, and the only considerations are what the considerations are for any corporate entity to make money. They are not humane. They're not human beings in the first place, with all due respect to the Roberts Corps, and they're not certainly not driven by humanitarian ideas and ideals. They're there to make money. So when I sing in Grand Marais, it will be a party. I will sing Puff the Magic Dragon and bring the kids up on stage. We may have to redefine the term so anybody under 50 is automatically a child. And it'll be a cross between a party, a concert, a view of history, and a kind of an inspiration to move forward with that same kind of spirit that's inherent in Peter Paul and Mary's music, which is what I sing.
You know, when I think of Puff the Magic Dragon, it's become such a thing in my life and in my understanding that I don't often think of it as it would have been brand new. And when I think about it as being something brand new, it was pretty amazing that a song like that would take off like it did, because it as you mentioned, it is childlike. It's kind of it's something that stems from childhood moving into adulthood. You can speak on it much better than I can.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, in today's world, can you imagine a song with this kind of tender, emotional story about the love between a dragon and a boy, that, by the way, has nothing to do with drugs. You've heard it from the dragon's father's mouth now. Whatever. Be a top-selling song? Hardly. You know, it just, it was a time in which people hungered for that kind of message. And it could be political or it could be personal, as was Puff the Magic Dragon. And frankly, that was one of the reasons that that period of time made this big leap into heart-centric music and efforts. We need that in our lives. We need the inspiration to reach for caring and compassion and goodness and generosity rather than selfishness and greed and mean-spiritedness and ridicule and bullying, which are the order of the day so profoundly that, and I'm not just talking about kids' worlds, I'm talking about the adult world. Look at Congress, look at the reality shows. I mean, there are exercises frequently in being entertained by humiliation or dysfunctionality. It's a difficult time, and in order for us to recapture the goodness of heart of our country and indeed the world, we need those elements that can inspire us in that way and take us away from this idea that life is all about material things. You go to a hospice. I work in a hospice. I sing for hospice patients. Nobody's wearing their jewelry. Nobody's talking about the killing they just made on the stock market. It's all about love and serving each other and caring about each other. Inside ourselves, we know this, but we've been kind of programmed to pursue these very false objectives that are ultimately not going to, it's not going to really give us satisfaction. So the tasks of today, both in terms of music and whatever else, you know, many of us are involved in, is a matter of recapturing that heart and soul.
You've been a big part of a lot of movements over the course of your career, you know, starting with the civil rights movement, the peace movement, the environmental movement. They've all kind of flowed from this, what happened in the 60s, a chaotic time. It was a violent but also innocent time. And you've continued to look for ways to help people see a path. And one of those ways have been very successful has been Operation Respect. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Right. Well, Operation Respect is a nonprofit that I founded 15 years ago. It has two arms. One of them is a program called Don't Laugh at Me. It's named after the song written by Steve Siskin and Alan Chapman. It's all over the world and in 22,000 schools in America. And it's looked upon as a violence prevention, anti-bullying program. But really what it does is create an environment of caring and loving and respect using the tools of social and emotional learning pedagogy that were collated and developed by Educators for Social Responsibility. And it uses music to to allow the kids to open their hearts and sing songs together and do what happened on the happens in every school, you know, 22,000 schools, whenever they sing these songs, whether it's Blowing in the Wind or We Shall Overcome or the Don't Laugh at Me song. And we're in countries all over the world. We're in the Middle East, in Israel now, in Jordan and Palestine. We're in Ukraine, in Croatia, in South Africa, in Hong Kong, in Bermuda, in Canada. Everybody, all these countries are experiencing this terrible problem of bullying and disrespect. And because of that, they want to create environments that are caring for their kids in their schools and bring them up to be loving, caring human beings. But the emphasis, to a large degree, in the United States and elsewhere, is on academic excellence, which is admirable. But that's not the only thing we want. We don't only want future workers of the world who can be scientists and mathematicians. We want good human beings. That's what we need for democracy, and that's what other countries need to function properly. So Operation Respect is premised on the idea that we really need the next generation to get out of this cycle of mean-spiritedness and cruelty and bullying and address the heart of what we're all about. And frankly, it's the most exciting work as an organizer I've ever done. And it's going brilliantly, so I couldn't be more grateful or excited.
We're speaking with Peter Yarrow, and Peter's going to be here in Grand Marais next weekend on the 26th, playing and talking about his concerns in society at 7:30 up at the Arrowhead Center for the Arts. Peter, I think in Minnesota, bullying and that type of behavior has kind of been pushed legislatively to find ways to stop it through, I guess it would be through punitive means. Your approach is more like, hey, let's create a better attitude.
Punitive means are going to fail. And although the law is well-intended, if it is not implemented with empathy for the victim and the bully, and if it does not address the bystanders, it will not help. Research shows that that's the case. I know that many of these zero-tolerance laws are having the inverse effect if they're not implemented properly. And I am familiar with some of the people that, as a matter of fact, I was just talking to Jim Graves yesterday, who ran in an election in St. Cloud and against Michelle Bachmann. And it was a very, very close race. And, you know, it could have gone either way. And one of the people that really promulgated this legislation was at the concert where I sang Don't Laugh at Me, and was inspired by this in a certain way that energized the work. So what I'm going to try to do is try to weigh in on the application of this well-intended law and make sure that it's done in such a way that it's successful rather than instituting punitive measures that will absolutely putting up these metal detectors and zero tolerance and kicking kids out of school. If somebody is really distressed, you've got to give them help, or you're going to have another Newtown shooting. You know, you've got kids all over the place that are having suicidal ideation. And I worked with the Newtown folks. I put on a concert that they asked me to bring the community together. And everybody there knows that it's about humanity, bringing caring into the community, whereby the culture of the school says we're going to be accepting of one another. And if it's going to be, let's punish anybody who steps out of line, I'm telling you, it's going to get worse. And it's going to have a negative impact. So that's something that needs to be done, and I'm certainly going to address that with as much energy and force as I can. You know, I'm very much connected to Minnesota because I married Beth McCarthy, and I married in 1969. We met in Jean McCarthy's campaign, and she has a residence there in St. Paul, and it's my intention to use whatever leverage I can to weigh in on this legislation, because I know its intention is positive, but it's the means by which you get there that are going to make it successful or not.
You've been very fortunate and worked very hard at this, of course, but to stay relevant all these years, not only through your songwriting, but also through your social activism. You have a daughter now who you play with often, Bethany, and also Rufus, I'll probably pronounce this wrong, Cappadocia?
Cappadocia, exactly.
That was close.
Yeah.
Now, that's got to feel really good that you're able to see this passing on.
Well, I'm also singing with Christopher Michael McCarthy tonight, who plays a mean washed-up bass and sings with me, and you can't tell whose voice is which. And he lives in Portland. And the joy of it, I'll be shortly going with Bethany and Rufus to both Israel and Palestine. We'll be going to Ramallah and West Jerusalem. Two concerts of caring, of goodwill. And hopefully it will be part of... So the work continues. I mean, I'm working with my very good friend, Secretary of State John Kerry, and he's very much in favor of these concerts. So this is not looking back at the past. We are right at the front lines of trying to use music in the context of what we could call music diplomacy or cultural diplomacy. And my daughter, who's a big environmental activist, mainly in the area of opposing hydrofracking, but also working on a project of the return of the Black Hills to Native Americans, to First Nations, and my son. I mean, it's a family tradition. We're all in it. And so is Mary Beth, who is a great organizer, Mary Beth McCarthy Yarrow.
We've been speaking with Peter Yarrow, and Peter is going to be in Grand Marais on April 26th. He's going to be playing and conversing with us at 7:30 at the Arrowhead Center for the Arts. Peter, I know that they're waiting for you to do a sound check, and you've been so gracious to give us your time. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we sure look forward to seeing you here in Grand Marais.
I love the way you've prepared this interview. You knew exactly where to go. I'm very grateful.
Well, thank you, Peter. You always know exactly where to go.
Thank you.
We'll see you in a week.
You bet. I'm looking forward, my friend. And get ready to come on stage and get ready to sing Leaving on a Jet Plane and sing Mary's part in the chorus.
Oh, great.
I'm going to bring her spirit on stage, too.